Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Bet, about 18 lines from the bottom. Gemara here is speaking about the case in the Mishnah in which the boat that Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim were on had come in towards the port and then actually landed at the port on Shabbat itself. Rabbi Gamliel says to them, you can get off the boat because we were within the Tchum when Shabbat entered. And as Tosafot points out, knowing that they were within the Tchum, they actually set up or they intended for their Shvitah to be within the city. But how did he know that? How did Rabbi Gamliel know they were within 2,000 amot of the city? So Tana Shpoferet Haitalo the Rabban Gamliel. He had a hollow reed, Shayama Bit Vitzofer Ba Alpaimama. It was narrow, had a hole through it, and when you looked at it, you were able to see out 2,000 amot. Whether that's because of the angle that it was set at, or Rashi discusses here the narrowness of the hole will only let you cast your vision only 2,000 amot. From that, he was able to know b'yabashah or k'negda apayim v'yam. He could tell 2,000 amot on land or 2,000 amot out in the water. He could tell you how far that distance was based on the scope that he had made. And that's what he looked through the scope when Shabbat was entering. And he saw that they were within 2,000 amot of the Yabashah of the dry land, and therefore they were included within the Tchum of the city where they ported. Harotele da, kama momko shel guy. Person wants to know how deep a gorges or a valley is. Mevish foferet, umebit ba. He can use the same utensil of Rabban Gamliel. Vihada, kama momko shel guy, and then he'll know how deep this gorge is. Now, if when he looks through it, he can see the bottom of the gorge, he starts to back up until he can no longer see the bottom of the gorge. At that point, he'll know it's 2,000 amot to the base of the gorge. He'll calculate how far he is away from the edge of the gorge, and that minus the 2,000 amot will give him the depth of the gorge. If a person wants to understand what the height of a palm tree is, and he's afraid to climb up and to do the measuring, he measures his height, vitzilo, and the shadow cast by the palm tree, vitzel komato, and then the shadow cast by his body. And then, and then he'll know how high the dekel is, how high the palm tree is. Because the shadow cast at different points of the day is different depending on the angle of the sun, but if you take the measurement at the same time of the day, and you measure the shadow cast by the dekel, and the shadow cast by your body, the height of your body, then if you know how tall you are, you can then use a relative ratio to determine what the height of the dekel is, what the height of the palm tree is. The relationship between your shadow and the shadow of the palm tree should be the same as the relationship between your height and the height of the palm tree. And that way you can measure how tall the palm tree is without actually climbing up and measuring the height of the palm tree. A person does not want an animal to take shade or refuge by the gravestones in the cemetery. So a person buries a mate, and afterwards they put on a tzion on top of the grave. And that tzion, when the sun shines, casts a shadow. So animals might come and then take refuge there in the shade in order to cool off. And once they're there, they might smell the mate that is there and dig it up. In order to prevent that, what should you do? Noetz kana b'dalet shaot, at about the fourth hour in the day, 10 o'clock on a perfect day, you put a stick into the ground, which is the same height as the tzion of the kever. Yireh leichan tzilo noteh, and you'll see how far the shadow is cast by this staff that's the same height as the tombstone, whether it's a block of the tombstone, a squared out block, or a tombstone at the head. Then, mashpia voleh, mashpia v'yoreid. Then he makes an incline on the side of that area that will block out the area that the shadow would cast. So at 10 o'clock in the morning, if you look at the shadow cast by the sun at 10 o'clock in the morning, you put a staff that is the height of this stone above the grave, and you see how far this shadow is cast. Based on that, you'll know when you put the stone on top of the grave, how much of a shadow will be cast. In that area of the shadow that will be cast, instead of leaving that open, that's where the animal would take refuge. You now build a ramp away from the grave that goes away from that stone, the equivalent of where that shadow area would be as a decline. And that decline would prevent an animal from taking refuge there. Now, it's true, as the day wears on, the sun is going to move, and then the shadow will be cast in different directions, and maybe the animals will come take refuge at later times of the day. Rashi says that won't happen because when the animals come to take refuge, it's around 10 o'clock. We know from the Gemara in Brachot, it says, V'chama shemesh namas, that's when the sun starts to get hot, and that's when they're looking for refuge. So at that time is when they're looking for refuge. If they don't find it then, they'll move on, and they won't come back to this area. That's one possibility. The other possibility is later in the day, both in the shade and in the sun, it's hot, and so therefore being in the shade is of no benefit to the animal at that point in time. But at 10 o'clock, where the shade is still cool and in the sun is hot, That's when there's a benefit of being in the shade. So if you prevent the animals from taking refuge at the 10 o'clock point, or the fourth hour on the day, then they won't come on later. And that'd be the way to solve your problem, is to test how far the shadow is cast at 10 o'clock, and then make a ramp alongside of the tombstone that would take up the same area as the shadow cast. And once you've done that, animals won't come take refuge over there. He was learning engrossed in his Torah Shebaal Peh. He's reviewing his learning. And unbeknownst to him, he walked out of the tchum. So Amar Rav Chisda or Rav Nachman. So Rav Chisda comes into Rav Nachman to ask him, what should we do? Nechemya Talmidcha Shorei B'Tzar. Nechemya, your student is in pain. I mean, he's left out now outside the tchum. He can't move. He can't move more than 4 amot. What should we do for him? Amar Lo, so Rav Nachman says, Aseh lo mechitza shel bnei adam yikanes. Make him a mechitza made out of people. We'll stand people next to him and around him all the way back into the tchum. And that'll make it into a mechitza, and then he'll be able to walk back into the area of his tchum, and once he comes back into the tchum, he'll regain his location. The Gemara is going to go through all of this and explain how this works or why it works. So Yativ Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Acharei the Rava. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was behind Rava. Yativ Rava Kamei the Rav Nachman. Rava was sitting in front of Rav Nachman. When they learned in those days, they used to sit in rows in front of the Rebbe. The older or better students were in the front, and then the younger or the less sharp students were further back. So over here, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is sitting behind Rava, who's sitting in front of Rav Nachman. From here, Tosafot proves that Rav Nachman in all of Shas, Stam Rav Nachman, is obviously not Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, but rather someone else. He claims that it's Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, that's Stam Rav Nachman throughout Shas, because here you see that there's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak sitting there, and he's sitting in front of Rav Nachman, behind Rava, in front of Rav Nachman. So I'm relay Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak le Rava. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says to Rava, Ma kami ba yilei the Rav Chisda. What exactly was the question that Rav Chisda had over here? So Sefot says that the Girsa should actually be not Amalei, but rather Vekami ba yilei, that he was asking. Either way, Rav Nachman Yitzchak is speaking to Rava and trying to understand the psak that Rav Nachman gave to Rav Chisda, and exactly what was Rav Chisda's question. So, Ilema b'demalu gavrei askinan. If we're saying that they put people from wherever Rav Nechemya was, all the way back into the area of the tchum that he needed to get to, was full of people until that point in time, v'kami b'ilei. And Rav Chisda's asking the question, hilchotuk rabin gamliel, or ain't alachik rabin gamliel? The alachik like rabin gamliel or not? Because we saw before that when someone goes out of tchum, and they land in an area that has a mechitza around it, we said there's a machloket as to what your status is. Is your status now that when you're in this new area outside of the tchum, because it's encircled, it has a mechitza around it, that whole area becomes like dalet amot for you and you can walk that whole area? Or do you literally get dalet amot? Well, Rabbi Gamliel told us earlier that you can gain the whole area. If you have a mechitza around you, you're allowed to walk the entire dalet amot. So that's the question here. If we put up a mechitza around him, is he allowed now to walk beyond his dalet amot? Because now he's encircled with a mechitza. Was that the question that Rav Chisda was posing? Is Alokha Kleg Rabbi Gamliel or not? Or, Dilma B'tvul Malu Gavrei Asfinan? Maybe it's a case where we don't have enough people to have the Mechitza reach all the way back to his Tchum, but rather we get close to the Tchum. Within 2 Amot of the Tchum, we get close enough. Kamivayle Alokha Krabi Lezer, Oin Alokha Krabi Lezer. Is Alokha like Rabbi Lezer or not? Rabbi Lezer, who says that if a person walks out of the Tchum, if they're within 2 amot of the end of the tchum, they can re-enter the tchum. And that's because the person's area, he gets dalet amot according to the chachamim. Rabbi Lezer believes you're sitting in the middle of your dalet amot, and you have 2 amot to each direction. And therefore, since the 2 amot that you have where you are now touch or reach back to the original tchum, then you're permitted to go back. And that's anywhere. So if we can get Nechemya within 2 amot of his original tchum, once he reaches that point, it's as if he's already back in, and he can walk the remainder. So is that the question? Is Allah like Rabbi Lezer or not? So Gemara says, Pshita. It must be Dvalo Malu Gavri Askinan. The question here is when we don't have enough people to make the Mechitza all the way back to the Tchum, and there's still a gap between the end of this Mechitza of people to the original Tchum that Rabbi Nechemya had. If it's a case where to have a Mechitza of people that reaches all the way back to the original Tchum, Mati Bayale. What's the question? Amarav Aloha Grogam Leo, but Dir Vesar Vespina. We already have a memra from the earliest of the Amoraim that the Alocha is like Rabbi Gamliel. That's by Dir Besor Sfina. And therefore, there wouldn't have been a safek over here as to what the Alocha was. So definitely the Alocha is like Rabbi Gamliel. Elevadei b'dol malu gavri askin. And the case here must be a case where the people that they put in the mechitza don't reach all the way back to the original tchum. They're within 2 amot of the original tchum. And now we want to know, can we utilize this din of Rabbi Eliezer? Would Rabbi Eliezer come by lei? Dei kanami. We can be medayek that from the nature of the response of Rav Nachman to Kamarle, Yikanes. Because Rav Nachman says to him, Aselo mechitza shu bnei adam, make him a mechitza of people, v'yikanes, and then he should come in. Well, why does he have to add that extra term of yikanes? Obviously, if there's a mechitza of people around him, he can walk. Why does he say v'yikanes? It must be that there's an additional step he must take beyond the mechitza of people. And that's mayikanes, lavdalo mechitza. It must be that that's the case without any mechitza in that area. So he has a mechitza of people around him, and then he reaches within two amot of the tchum, and once he reaches within two amot of the tchum, then he can re-enter based on Rabbi Lezer's principle, because he has two amot around him, that is his personal area, and now his personal area overlaps with the original tchum that he had, and now he may re-enter into his original tchum. Tosafot just points out over here that even if we don't hold like Rabbi Eliezer, had there been a mechitza of people all the way back to the original tchum, then he would have been allowed to go back into the tchum, even though the Rabbanan say once you leave the tchum, even an amah out, you're not allowed to return. Here it would be different, because once you put up the mechitza, we permit you to move around. Once you moved around, you've left the dalet amot where you're stuck right now, and moved to a new dalet amot, and a new dalet amot. Every time you move, you reset your dalet amot. And over here, because the mechitza reaches all the way back to the original tchum, once he reaches the original tchum, we say, yeah, he resets his number to four amot, but there he's resetting to his whole tchum. Once he's inside his tchum, we get a complete reset, and he goes back to his original status. But if the wall could only get back within two amot of the original tchum, then Rabbi Eliezer would permit you to go further because of the four amot around you. But the Chachamim would say, no, since you're still outside of the original tchum and your new four amot don't bring you inside the tchum, we don't allow you to reset it. And that was the question here. Since we pass like Rabbi Gamliel allows you to move, then certainly if we had the mechitza of people going all the way back to the original tchum, everybody would agree that it's permitted to go back in and have your tchum reset. Question is, if you can get the mechitza of people only within two amot of the original tchum, can you continue onward into the tchum? And that's a question. Do we pass like Rabbi Lezer, or do we not pass like Rabbi Lezer? Now, Eitavei Rav Nachman Yitzchak the Rava. Nachman Yitzchak asks Rava about this whole case here. Is it possible that we can make a mechitza on Shabbat to help someone out? Because nafal dofna, if a wall of the sukkah falls down, lo yamid ba'adam behemav v'kelim, you can't replace that wall with a person, an animal, or some utensils. Lo yisgof et amita, or if you have a bed in the sukkah, you can't flip it up to become the wall, defros alei asadin, and put a sheet over it to become that wall. V'sheino sim olarai b'tchila b'yom tov, because you're not allowed to create even a temporary ohel from the beginning on Yom Tov, ein zarech lomar b'Shabbat, and certainly not on Shabbat. So if that's the case by Sukkah, that you're not allowed to make a mechitza on Shabbat, why isn't that true over here? How come we're allowed to make a mechitza for Reb Nechemiah to come back in? So I'm like, atamart li maha. You're questioning me from that breita. I'll bring you a breita that supports this, which is, ose adam et chaviro dofen. Person can make his friend into a wall. So that he is able to eat, drink, and to sleep there. Those are the, Rashi says, the primary utility of a sukkah. These three items, the primary mitzvot of sukkah. And a person can take his friend, have him stand there, and become a wall for him so that he can utilize the sukkah. Or another thing, viskofet amita. He's allowed to flip up a bed, refrosel asadin, and put a sheet on it. So that it will stop the sun from beating directly down on the mate. Or on the food. So he's allowed to use it. He's allowed to make a mechitza on Yom Tov. So here you have the permissibility of making a mechitza on Yom Tov or on Shabbat. And that's what they utilized for Reb Nechemiah as well. Problem is, kashin adodi. We have a stira in the breitot. And we have to reconcile this stira in the breitot in order to understand where Rav Nachman or where Rav Nachman Shita comes from. It's obvious that he has a breitot that supports him, that you're allowed to make such a mechitza. But how do we reconcile between the two breitot? Mar says Lokash, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbanan. That's actually the bright daughter authored by different Tanaim, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbanan, who we bumped into in the Gemara and Shabbat. It's not. Kaka Chalon, we're talking about the shutter of the window. In those days, the windows did not have glass in them, but rather you put in a shutter to close the window. When you put in that shutter, Rabbi Eliezer, Mer, Bizmacha, Kashur, Vitalui, you're only allowed to put that closure of the window in when that shutter is, number one, tied to the original building. And it's hanging, it doesn't reach the ground. Because then it looks like it's a part of the original building, and you're not doing something new on Shabbat. So then, if it's kashur v'toloi, pokekimbo. If that's not the case, ain't pokekimbo. Kamimamim, ben kachu ben pach, pokekimbo. It doesn't matter, you can put the window in. So you see here, you have a machlok between Rebbe Lezer and the Chachamim, as to whether you're allowed to put in this window or window shutter on Shabbat. So we'll say the same thing here. The Chachamim will be the author of the Braita that says you may put up the wall. And Rabbi Elazar will be the author of the Braita that says you may not put up the wall. Because that's what they're arguing about here, whether you're allowed to add something to the building on Shabbat. Gemara says, Vayit Marla, that's not exactly what their machloket is about, because we have a statement from Amar Rabbi Barchan or Rabbi Yochanan explaining that machloket. Hakol modim sheino sim ol arayi b'tchila b'yom tov. Everybody agrees, both the Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar, you're not allowed to start an ol arayi on Yom Tov, or in Tzorech Lomar Shabbat, or Shabbat. Lo nechol guel olo sif. The machloket is whether you're allowed to add on to an existing ohel and a temporary ohel on Shabbat or on Yom Tov. Well, it says you may not add on Yom Tov, and certainly not on Shabbat. So putting the shutter into the wall would be like adding on to an ohel, and that would be restricted on Shabbat and Yom Tov. If it's kashur v'taluy, if it's tied to the wall and it's hanging, then it's clear that this shutter belongs there and is made to go in and out. But it doesn't look like then you're building or adding on. Whereas you can add on to the building if the building already exists and you're just being mosif on the ol arayi, that you're allowed to do on Shabbat, and certainly you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov. But it's clear here that they both agree that you're not allowed to start an ohel on Shabbat and on Yom Tov. So neither of them can be the author of this braita that says you can put up a wall for a sukkah on Yom Tov or Shabbat, because that's putting up something that is a mechitza from the beginning or from scratch. And that neither of them permit. So they can't be the explanation of these two braitot, the reconciliation of these two braitot, because neither of their opinions would allow them to be the authors of the braita that says you're allowed to put up this wall on Yom Tov for the Sukkah. So where it says, okay, you're right, that isn't the machloket, they're not. Elokasha haki Rabbi Meir, haki Rabbi Yehuda. It's actually a machloket Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, detanya. Asal behema dofen Sukkah. If he makes an animal into the wall of his Sukkah, Rabbi Meir posel, Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Meir says, that's not a good wall. Rabbi Yehuda says, it is a good wall for your sukkah. So this will be the way we explain it now. Rabbi Meir, kapasil, hotam. Rabbi Meir says that it's not a good wall. Amalo mechitzi. So it's not a good mechitza. So hachashari. So then on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, he'll say, go ahead, put up the wall for the sukkah. Delav midei kovit. Because you're not doing anything. When you put up the wall, you're not doing anything. If you're not doing anything, then why do we mind? V'Rabbi Yehuda, dekamachshir, hotam. And Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it is good for a wall for a sukkah, there in Dine Sukkah, Alma Mechitzahi, it's working, then Hachasar, with the Gabbai Shabbat, he'll say that it's a sur. So, they actually have the opposite opinions as to what they say in Sukkah. By a Sukkah, Rabbi Meir says that an animal is not a good wall. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says it is a good wall. So Rabbi Meir says it's not a good wall by Sukkah, we'll say by Shabbat. No problem. You want to put it up? It's great, because you're not doing anything. You're having no impact on the Sukkah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, that since it is a good wall for Sukkah, it's also then going to be a problem for putting up on Shabbat. So Rabbi Yehuda will be the author of the first braita that Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchok brought down that says you may not put up these walls on Shabbat. And Rabbi Meir will be the author of the second braita that does allow you to put up the walls on Sukkah, on Shabbat, because you're not doing anything. You're having no impact. Now, the main problem with this explanation is that the braita that we're supposedly saying is authored by Rabbi Meir says, Oseh adam et chaviro dofen, kedei shiuchal vishteh v'yashen. So that in order they can eat, drink, and sleep there. Which means that whatever he's putting up here is effective in making this into a sukkah. And what we're saying is that according to Rabbi Meir, he's not doing anything because what Rabbi Meir says, this isn't a good wall. So the problem here is that issue makes it impossible for Rabbi Meir to be the author of that braita. Rashi already points out this problem, and he says, I know Hanami, the Gemara could have asked that question, but it chose to ask other questions. On the other hand, Tosafot says that the second question of the Gemara, even though it doesn't look exactly like that, is exactly this question about how could it be that, according to Rabbi Meir, you're not doing anything, and yet the Braita is saying that you're solving the problem, making this into a good sukkah. So the first question of the Gemara, this explanation of the Braita is, V'tisbara? Does that make sense? Imer d'shmaile the Rabbi Meir behema. Adam v'keleim mishmaile. The first problem we have is, Rabbi Meir's statement by sukkah is only made by an animal, because over there he says, Shemetivrach, it'll run away. And since it'll run away, we don't consider it to be a wall that could stand for 7 days, and that's why it's not kosher for sukkah. But by Adam v'kelim, by utensils, by a person who has dat, over there, who says that Rabbi Meir agrees and says it's not a good sukkah? And the problem is, the braita says, Ose Adam et chaviro dofen. And then the next case is the case of Iskovet Amita. So I'm at Adam v'kelim. Who says that Rabbi Meir's opinion by behema can be extrapolated to Adam v'kelim? Doesn't seem to be true, because his whole reason by behema is that it'll run away. That's not true by Adam v'Kelim. So that's the number one problem with the setting up that braita as being authored by Rabbi Meir. The second problem is, the two, Rabbi Meir libidaman. Who is Rabbi Meir subscribing to? Yolibid Rabbi Eliezer. If he holds like Rabbi Eliezer, lo sif nami asar. If he holds like Rabbi Eliezer from the Pkaka Chalon, over there, Rabbi Eliezer says, not only can you not put up an oil arai tchila, you may not even be mosif al oil arai. El alibid the Rabbanan. So we're going to say that he holds like the Rabbanan. Imer damri Rabbanan lo sif. The Rabbanan say you can add on to an oil arai, but the chatchila mi amor, since when do they say that you can put on a ohel to start with? So even if he doesn't hold like Rabbi Eliezer, his Rebbe, nevertheless, even if he holds like the Rabbanon only allow you to do that because it has no halachic ramifications to put the shutter into the wall. But over here, where you're going to put up the wall of the sukkah and it has halachic ramifications, that's going to be problematic even according to the Rabbanan. And so who is Rabbi Meir holding like? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbanan? Either way, Rabbi Meir doesn't have a position that he could subscribe to would allow him to put up the wall. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot says this second question is exactly what we're asking about how can you reconcile here between Rabbi Meir and the Braita. What we're saying now is that Rabbi Meir believes that this is called Mosif ala Ohel. This is called adding on to an Ohel. And since it's called adding on to an Ohel, that's why he permits it. The Gemara goes, well, how do you reconcile that with the Braita? The Braita says that you're making it into a dofen and it's making the Sukkah Kasher. If that's the case, then putting up the wall here is not simply putting up a wall and being mosif and all right, you are making a mechitza. If you're making a mechitza, there's nobody who says you can make a mechitza on Yom Tov or Shabbat. And that's the Gemara's question, exactly the problem that Rashi raised that we mentioned up front about the problem of having Rabbi Meir be the author of this Braita. That's one way Tosfot mentions it. The other one is the Sar Mikutzi also says the reason that Rabbi Meir thinks that it's not good for a wall of a sukkah is because it can't stand for 7 days. The behemah is going to run away and it won't stay there for 7 days. So therefore, it is a mechitza. It will work, but it won't be good enough for sukkah. So that means by Rabbi Nechemya, we'll say the same thing. He has a wall there. By there, we don't worry about it being there for 7 days. So it will function as a good mechitza. But that means also by sukkah, as long as the animal's there, it is a kosher sukkah. You're right, it won't be permanently there, and it won't stay forever. But in the meantime, you can eat it in that sukkah. If that's the case, then that wall is functioning as a good wall, and it's not just being mosif al arai, it's not just something that is not meaningful there. It's something that's meaningful because it changes the halachic designation of that area to being a kosher sukkah. And because of that, Rabbi Meir can't be the author of that braita, because according to Rabbi Meir, this is nothing, and the braita is saying that it is a good mechitza. And if you say even according to Rabbi Meir could become a good mechitza temporarily, that means it's doing something halachically. If it's doing something halachically, that's like putting up an ohel from the start. And that's not permitted on Shabbat and Yom Tov, because you can be mosif al arai, you can't start an ol arai. And that's the question from Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim here, because everybody agrees you may not start an ol arai over here. Tosafot here also notes something that he disagreed with Rashi, and we mentioned when we did it in the Gemara and Shabbat about this Pkaka Chalon. Rashi believes that ohel can only be created for something that is done on the roof or the top, whereas Tosafot believes that even things on the wall are called an ohel. Rashi proves and has a number of examples in Shas where ohel is only something in the top, the cover, the roof of the area, and that's why it's called an ohel. Mechitzot are not a problem of ohel on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Tosafot quotes Rashi, and then he says our Gemara is proof that there is a problem of ohel even with mechitzot, because that's what we're talking about here, mechitzot, and we're talking about an ohel. And so therefore, Tosafot says the word ohel can refer both to the roof as well as the walls, and both of those have issues with regards to Shabbat. Rashi will have to reconcile or deal with our Gemara, and he'll have to say, that's right, ohel only applies to the roof, but walls that have an impact, halachic impact, on an area, they change an area from Rishut Rabim to Rishut Yachid, they change an area from a Karmeli to Rishut Yachid, or a Sukkah, they make it into an area that's now usable for Sukkah, over there they will have a din of Ohel, even though they are walls, because they're having halachic impact. And halachic impact is the determining factor for Ohel. So generally, when we're talking about building, building only has to do with the roof, and Ohel is only called something on the roof. If, by chance, it also has halachic impact, then even the walls can have consideration of Ohel. And that's how we'll have to answer for Rashi. This does have a nafkamina with regards to putting up a mechitza in a shul to designate a women's area. Can you put up a mechitza to separate between the men's section and the women's section? So we know that you're allowed to be mosif al ol arai, but you can't make an ol arai on Shabbat. So if the mechitza has already existed and you're just extending it, that's one thing. But what happens if you wheel the mechitza in and you put up the women's section on Shabbat? You make that section. Is that permissible on Shabbat or not? That would really have to do with whether you are doing something halachically. Is there a halachic necessity? Have you created a new halachic reshut that's necessary within the shul for the women to daven there. If it has halachic implications, and the women's section has to be there and creates a separate shul, then it would maybe be problematic on Shabbat. According to most of the poskim, since that is not an absolute necessity to have the mechitza there, and it doesn't have that halachic impact, therefore one is permitted to put up the mechitzot or the women's section on Shabbat. So now the Gemara says, Ela ha vaha rabbonon. In the end, we have to say both brightot are authored by the rabbonon. V'kelim ha-kelim lo kasho. So now the rabbonon say you can't make an olaright to start with on Shabbat and Yom Tov, but you can be mosif. How do we reconcile between the brightot? Habedofen shlishit, habedofen rivi'it. A sukkah requires three walls to be kasher. So one of the brightot is talking about the third wall. When you put up the third wall on Shabbat on Yom Tov, that's problematic because then you're creating something new on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and that's not allowed. That's the first brayta. The second brayta says that you can put up a wall. That's talking about the fourth wall. The fourth wall is simply for tzniut. It's simply there for designating the area for privacy, but it has no halachic impact. And therefore, according to Rashi, it means it's not called an ohel at all. And according to Tosafot, it's called musif al olarai. That's an addition of the ohel, because since it's not necessary, it doesn't have significance in and of itself, and that's why it's permitted. And the Gemara says, Dekanami, Diktani, because it says in the Braita, Nafal Dufna, its wall fell down. So now, that wall that fell down, Demashma Dufen Shihi Muterit Ba, that the wall that is making it Mutar. The first Braita says, Nafal Dufna, the wall. Sounds like it's something that's a necessity of that area, it fell down. Well, what's a necessity? That's the third wall. So in that Braita, it says you may not replace the wall. You may not put something in its place because then you're making it a kosher sukkah. The second braita, it says, Osei Adam et Chavero Dofen, that's talking about the fourth wall, where it's only for its tzniut purposes. It does not have halachic implications. There, that is permissible. So now we've explained the stira between the two braitot, at least with regards to kelim. From there, from the diok, we can see that that is the right explanation. Ela Adam Adam Kasha, you still have a stira between the braitot about using a person. In the first bright that says you may not use a person, and the second bright that says you may use a person. We answered as far as the mitah, as the bed is concerned. As far as the bed is concerned, by the first bright that you cannot use it, because you are making a wall that has halachic implications, the third wall of the sukkah. But you can use it in the case of the mate, or in the case of making the fourth wall of the sukkah. There it is permissible, because there you're not doing anything that has halachic implications. It's simply for its niyut. El adam v'adam kasha, but what are you going to do about the adam mentioned in both places? Adam, Adam, lo noi kasha, that's not a problem. Kan ledat, kan shlo dedat. Depends if the people who are being made into the mechitza know they're being used as a mechitza or not. If they know they're being used as a mechitza, then it's problematic. If they do not know that they're being used as a mechitza, then it's okay. Rashi says, shlo ledat is mutar, mishum asiyat ol leka lemeimar. It's not called making an oel. De'ein derech binyan bekach. It's not the way to make a building. And since it's not the way to make a binyan, with kelim, that is a way to make a binyan or make a structure. Human beings are not used for a structure. So therefore, if it's shalol adat, if it's not with their knowledge, then it's okay. But if you do it with their knowledge, then it's not considered to be good because then they're really functioning as a structure or working towards your goal, and that would be problematic. So Gemara says, v'ad Rebbe Nechemia, b'rei Rebbe Chaninai, l'dat havo. But in this case, if you're going to say that the solution to our problem with Rav Nachman is how did he make mechitza on Shabbat, is because they didn't know about it. Isn't the case of Nehemiah Braid Rabbi Chanai, they knew they were going out there to help him out. The people that went out there went to make a mechitza for him. So how could they do that on Shabbat? Marseh Shalom Midat Havel. They didn't know. They were taken out there. They were not informed as to why they were going out there. They were just told to go out there and stand like this, but not told why they were going out there. Marseh, but at minimum, Rav Chista Midat Havel. Chista came and asked Rav Nachman what to do. He definitely knew what was going on. So what about him? Gemara says, Rav Chista shlo mina minyan hava. Rav Chista knew about it. He organized everything. But he himself was not a part of the mechitza. Since he wasn't a part of the mechitza, there was nobody there who was making the mechitza that was ledat. And that is what Tosafot mentions actually earlier. Why don't we have the people, after you make a mechitza, then move over and make another mechitza for him to get in? If our whole question was, they didn't have enough people to get them all the way back to the tchum. They were still two amot away. Is the halacha like Rabbi Eliezer or not? So Tosafot over there says, okay, easy solution. Once they made a mechitza to get them there, they'll move forward and make a mechitza to get into the tchum. The answer is you can't do that. Because in the first case, when they were a mechitza, it was shalom midat. Once they see Rabbi Nechemia walking and using them as a mechitza, after that point, if we had them line up further in to make another mechitza, that would be midat, and that would be problematic. And that's why we need to know whether Loch is like Rabbi Lezer or not when the people don't reach all the way back to the Tchum. And that'll be Rav Nachman's solution over here. He used people who didn't know they were being used as a mechitza, so it's not derech binyan bekach. That allowed Rabbi Nechemiah to approach the tchum, his original tchum, to get within two amot of his original tchum. And then the question that Rav Chista asked, is that enough? Since when he's within two amot of his original tchum, is that enough, based on Rabbi Eliezer, for him to re-enter the tchum? And Rabbi Nachman said, yes, that is good enough. Hanu b'nei ganana, da'ilu maya b'mechitza shel b'nei adam. Is b'nei ganana, we bumped into them before, they're gardeners, or whether it's a location, they were people that were not necessarily from a makom Torah. They made a wall of people as mechitzot, and they used that to bring water. Mechitzah shmei adam. Nagdino Shmuel. Shmuel gave them makot for violating an isur derabanan, for doing something wrong. Amar, im amru shalom idat, yomru ledat. Even if they say that they are doing it shalom idat, and they didn't know they were being a mechitza, people are going to see this, and they're going to end up doing it midat. Or, he didn't believe them that they did shalom idat, and they really did it midat, and therefore he gave them makot. Hanu zike. So there were these flasks that were left on the public roads of Mechuza. So when Rava was coming back from giving the drusha on Shabbat, and like any big Rava gives the drusha, the students were following, or people asking questions were all around him. So then they came across these zike, these flasks that were strewn on the ground. And by the nature of the people being all around them, they actually created a mechitza, and they were able then to carry the zikin back into the Rishut HaYachid, back into Rabba's house. So Eilinu, Miali, then they brought him in. The Shabta Achrita, it happened again on the following Shabbat, the same incident happened. By Eilinu, they wanted to bring them in again. Vasar Luhu. He said, no more, you can't do it anymore. At that point, people understood what happened the previous week. And now it's already with their understanding. They're being used as a mechitza knowingly. Because before, when they did this, it was all done unbeknownst to them. They just happened to be around him, formed a mechitza, and then they utilized that mechitza. But once they saw him do it once, they knew what had transpired. And knowing what had transpired, the following time it would be as if they're doing it with knowledge or with foreknowledge. And therefore, he wouldn't allow them to do that. Levi, ayay lilei tivno, zire asfasta, rabshimi bar chia mayo. So you have all these Amoraim who had a similar situation in which some of their items were out in the Rishut, or an area where they couldn't carry in. And because of a human mechitza around them, they were able to bring them in. They brought in, whether it was tivna, straw. Safsta is the immature grain that is used as animal feed, or rabshimi bar chia for water that they brought in. Again, they utilized this same heter that Rava had done, because unbeknownst to the people that were there, they formed a mechitza that allowed them to carry these things in, and then obviously they could only do that once, not multiple times. Okay, next Mishnah. Mi sheyatza birshut. Someone who went out, for whatever reason, out of the tchum, but with permission. He was allowed to leave it. Rashi says, eduta chodesh. He's going to testify in Beit Din about seeing the new moon. Or, there was a battle, or some sort of difficulty or emergency, that they needed his help, or a midwife needs to go help a woman give birth. For whatever reason, they left their tchum with permission. They caught him before he went to engage in whatever emergency or whatever reason he was going, and he was told already, it's done, you don't have to go any further. From wherever they stop him, he gets 2,000 amot in any direction. If he's in his original tchum, it's as if he never left. So that the Gemara will have to address. What does that mean? Of course, if he's an original tchum, he never left. So why does it say if he never left? The Gemara will have to address that. Well, yotzim latzil chuzrim limgoman. Anybody who goes out to do something, an emergency, or help out in a situation, is allowed to return to the original location. That we'll deal with in tomorrow's daf. So now, what does the Mishnah mean? Imaya b'toch ha-tchum kilo lo yatza. If he's still within his original tchum, it's as if he never left. So Amar Rabba, Rabba gives one explanation, which is Hachi Gamar. If he's in the original 2,000 amot that he had coming into Shabbat, it's as if he never left his house. Where it says Pshita. Of course, he didn't leave his house. He didn't leave the area. So why is there a question? Since he left his house with the intent of leaving the tchum, it's as if now that he has been mitvatel, he has nullified his original Shvita, and it's as if he restarts. Wherever he ends up, that's his new tchum. Mashmah, that's not the case. It's not the case until he leaves the original tchum. Do we say that he gains a new tchum, or we reset his tchum? His tchum is only reset when he leaves his original tchum for Shabbat. As long as he reigns in the original tchum, it's not as if he nullified his original tchum. That's the position of Rabba. Rav Shimi bar Chiya amar hachi kamar. This is what it means. Im ayu tchumim shenatnu lo chachamim uvlaim betoch ha-tchum shelo, kilo yatza mitchumo. If, after he leaves his tchum, he finds out that the emergency is over, or he's gone into where he needs to go and he stops, and now he gets 2,000 amot from wherever he is. That 2,000 amot, if it overlaps with his original tchum, then he can return to his original tchum. And once he returns to his original tchum, then he regains his original tchum. So now the question is, b'mai kamiflige, what's the machloket or nukudata machlok between Rabba and Rav Shimi bar Chiya? Mar sav rav la tchumim miltehi? Mar sav rav miltehi? One of them holds Rav Shimi bar Chiya that have lat tchumim. The overlap of the tchumim is considered to be something that's meaningful. That's Rav Shimi. Rav Shimi says that as long as your new tchum overlaps with your original tchum, then you go back to your original tchum. Once you go back to your original tchum, then you go back to being where you were before, if you overlap. Rabba says it doesn't matter. Overlapping tchumim are not meaningful. And overlapping tchumim doesn't mean anything. If you've left your tchum, you have a reset. And you have a reset, that's your new tchum. And you can't regain your old tchum. Rashi says, based on this, that Rabba disagrees with what we saw from the Naradai earlier on. The Naradai earlier on said that if a person goes out of the tchum, and now he's stuck with only Dalet Amot, if he has to relieve himself, he has to go to the bathroom, then he should walk towards his original tchum, and if he happens to get back into his original tchum to relieve himself, then he regains his original tchum. Rashi says that Rabba obviously disagrees with that position of the Naradai. Tosfot, on the other hand, says that doesn't have to be true. The Reed says that Rabba can even subscribe to that position of Naradai, because over there, when he left his tchum, he has nothing left. He only gets Dalet Amot. That's all he gets. He's stuck in his Dalet Amot. And then when he moves to go relieve himself, he resets and resets his Dalet Amot. And when he resets his Dalet Amot, once he's in his tchum, that reset regains him his whole tchum. Over here is a case where he's not stuck in Dalet Amot. He has a new tchum. He has a full 2,000 amot in each direction according to Rabba. And Rabba says just because he can walk back into his original tchum, there's no reset there. It doesn't put him back into his original tchum and then restore it, because there's nothing restarted. He has 2,000 amot in each direction. The overlap itself is not meaningful enough to cause it that he goes back to his original tchum. So Tosafot, the Reis says that Rabba could subscribe to the position of Naradai versus his position here, because the two are different. In one case, he's gained a new tchum. That's our case here. There's the other case where he's stuck in Dalet Amot, and every time he moves beyond that Dalet Amot, it resets. If he happens to reset within the original Tchum, then he regains his original Tchum. That's the first Lashon in Rashi as to explaining the Machlok between Rabba and Rav Shimi bar Chiya. Rashi brings a second Lashon, which in the end he says is not the better Lashon, but he spends time and does explain it throughout, that actually Rabba and Rav Shimi both agree that the overlap of Tchumim is meaningful. The only question is, that overlap of tchumim, what does it allow you? So Rabba says, if your tchumim overlap, then you're allowed to go back to your original tchum. And once you go back to your original tchum, then it's as if you're back to normal. Back to your original tchum, and that's all you have. Rav Shimi bar Chiya, on the other hand, believes that once you have overlapping tchumim, you can actually utilize both of them. It's as if you now have expanded your ability to walk on Shabbat. And if your new tchum and your old tchum overlap, you can walk the span of both of them. And that's a machloka between them. Not about whether you can be mivlein, that they can join together and allow you to go back to the original. The only question is, if you can go back to the original, what do you have now? Rabba says you only have your original tchum, and that's all you're left with. Whereas Rav Shimi bar Chiya says you get your original tchum plus the new tchum, you get a double tchum now. And that's the second lashon that's brought in Rashi as the explanation between Rabba and Rav Shimi bar Chiya. He has to adjust the girsa a little bit based on that girsa. So Amar Lei Abaye the Rabba, V'adlo Tizbra, Davlat Tchumim Miltehi. Rabbi says to Rabbi, you don't think that this overlapping of tchumim is meaningful? If a person came into Shabbat and he was inside of a cave that had 4,000 amot on the bottom. The cave is very wide at the base, and this cave that he's in has 4,000 amot, which he's allowed to walk the entirety of that 4,000 amot on Shabbat, 2,000 amot in each direction. But the top of the cave is narrower than those 4,000 amot. And it has two doorways out, one on each end of the cave, one on the eastern end of the cave, one on the western end of the cave. Don't you agree? Valgaga pachot mi'arba alafim amah. The difference between the two doorways is less than 4,000 amot. So at the base, it's very wide. You can see the picture in Rashi, it's 4,000 amot. When you reach up to the top, the exit from the cave, there's less than 4,000 amot between the two exits from the cave, the eastern exit and the western exit. Don't you agree that this person, if he goes out, lo nimtza malechet kula, b'chutzla abayim ama, this person then gains a tchum like this. If he exits from the eastern exit, he can go 2,000 amot to the east. If he exits from the western egress, he can go 2,000 amot to the western side. Because of that, and because his tchum from either doorway overlaps, the tchum overlapped the two doorways, we actually allow him to walk outside, 2,000 amot to the east from the eastern doorway, 2,000 amot from the western doorway to the west, plus, he can walk across the top of the cave. He can walk in either direction, 2,000 amot from the doorways, plus the space between the doorways. So he'll actually have a tum that exceeds 4,000 amot. 2,000 amot in each direction from the doorways, plus the area in between, as long as it's less than 4,000 amot, because then this tumim will overlap. We give him the whole area. So you see, overlapping tumim have an impact here. Because they overlap, it's as if he gained two tumim, and he's allowed to walk across both of them. So according to the second Lashon, it proves that you can have an expanse that is a double tum in both areas. Or according to the first Lashon, it proves that the overlap of the tumim has impact here, because we allow this individual to walk on both tumim because they overlap and he can move from one to the other. Whereas if the top had been 4,000 amot wide, then we would only allow him to walk 2,000 amot to the east from the eastern doorway, 2,000 amot to the west from the western doorway, and then if he wanted to get from one to the other, he'd have to enter the cave and then come back out the other side. He would not be able to walk on top. So here you see that this overlap has impact. So Rabba says back to the Marlei, V'lo shani lach ben eicha de shavad bavir mechitzot mi bod yom, be'eicha de lo shavad bavir mechitzot mi bod yom. Isn't there a big difference to whether he gained the mechitzot before Shabbat began versus gained mechitzot after Shabbat began? We've seen this distinction in the Gemara before, that there's a big difference between acquiring mechitzot at the onset of Shabbat. If the mechitzot are there on the onset of Shabbat, then yes, you can have overlapping tumim like this case of the cave. Or in the other instance, some of the Tanaim in the Mishnah would say, okay, you have mechitzot around you, that's classified like Dalet Amot. But on Shabbat, all of a sudden the mechitzot show up on Shabbat, or you have a new tum on Shabbat, that is not going to be granted these dispensations of muvlain, overlapping tumim. Or in the case of the Mishnah, where the Tanaim said that you don't make it into four Amot just because you have mechitzot around you that showed up in the middle of Shabbat. There's a big difference between coming into Shabbat in a state and then gaining that state in the middle of Shabbat. You're right. Coming into Shabbat, everybody agrees that mechitzot make it all into Dalet Amot. The case of the cave, these overlapping tchumim make it as if it's one big expanse. On Shabbat, that's a different story, and that's what Rabba says. I don't agree to Rav Shimi Bar Chiya's position because this is happening on Shabbat itself. He gains a new tchum on Shabbat because he's in a new location. And therefore, either according to the first Lashon, that's his 2,000 Amot and no more. According to the second Lashon, yes, he can return to his original tum, but he's not going to get a double tum now. So he says, Vatnan. So Rabbi says back to him, Vatnan, Rabbi Elezer Omer, Shtayim Yikanes, Gimel Lo Yikanes. This is Rabbi Elezer that we mentioned before. Rabbi Elezer says that if you exceed your tum, you walk out of your tum, if you're within two amot of the original tum, then you may re-enter. If you're more than that away, then you cannot re-enter. Because we said that a person is centered on his four amot, and if his personal space then overlaps with the tchum, he can then re-enter the tchum. My love, Rabbi Eliezer l'tamei, damar, v'hu b'emtzan. Eliezer's l'shitato, that he's in the middle of his four amot. V'ar b'amot, avi le'rabonin, k'man d'mivlan damu. And the reason he allows you to re-enter the tchum is because his personal space now overlaps with the tchum, and that's why he can go back in. So again, you see that havla'a makes a difference. Now, according to the first Lashon, this makes sense as a question, because you now have Havla'a allowing him to re-enter the original Tchum. Nobody says now he gets a double Tchum. That's why Rashi says, according to the second Lashon, the question here isn't such a great question. Although Rashi tries to say, well, over here they're not really overlapping, they're just touching. And since they're just touching, and you still say Muvla'in, we see that Muvla'im have a big impact. And therefore, if they were really overlapping, we'd give him a double Tchum. So that's why he doesn't like the second Lashon as much, because then this question becomes more difficult. So Malay, Rabba Bar Chanin says to Abaye, Umid Rabbi Elezer, kamotiv le, lemar. He says, you're asking from Rabbi Elezer to Mar, Abaye's Rebbe is Rabba. So you're asking on your Rebbe from Rabbi Eliezer. No, there's Rabbi Elezer. You know who argues on Rabbi Elezer? The Chachamim. So who says that Rabba subscribes to the position of Rabbi Eliezer? He'll just subscribe to the position of the Chachamim and it won't be a question on him. Sure, Rabbi Elezer holds a Muvlayim. He holds like the Chachamim who don't hold the Muvlayim. So Muvlayim, I did ask from Rabbi Elezer, the Shmili Minei Demar, because I heard from Rabba, Adgan Lo Bligi Rabban Alei de Rabbi Elezer, Ela Dvar Rishut, that they only argue on Rabbi Elezer when it comes to something that is Rishut, optional. Aval the Dvar Mitzvah, Modilei, if for whatever reason he ended up out there for a Dvar Mitzvah, or because of a Dvar Mitzvah he needs to come in, even the Chachamim agreed to the position of Rabbi Elezer that if he's two amot out, he can come back in. So you see that the Rabbanon do subscribe to this din of Muvlayin. Even though they may not agree in all instances that it works, but you see that they do have this din of Muvlayin. And if they have this din of Muvlayin, Rabbo, how could you disagree with that concept of Muvlayin over here? And that's why Abaye is challenging that position of Rabbo in disagreement with Rav Shimi Bar Chiya. And that's why we pass in like Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, that Muvlayim does have an impact over here, according to the first Lashon of Rashi. has an impact allowing you to return to your original tchum if they overlap, or according to the second lashon of Rashi, it would actually give you a double tchum. Although again, Rashi and Tosafot seem to have difficulty with that second lashon, and so therefore we pass on the Rishimi Bar Chia according to the first lashon in Rashi. Okay, we'll stop over here.